I'll be the first to say, like, as a business owner, I make a ton of mistakes, but the whole point is to make them, right? You make a decision, because the other thing that we don't want to do is just not make decisions. Too many business owners are afraid to make decisions, and so they just let issues linger. If you find yourself thinking about the same issue for 2 or 3 or 4 or more weeks, and you haven't actually done something to try to change it, this is your wake-up call. Like, just get in there, make a mistake.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Answering Legal's Everything Except the Law podcast. I am your host, Nick Worker. If this is your first time tuning in, this is the podcast where we share expert advice on all the parts of running a law firm that attorneys weren't exactly trained for back in law school. Now, on this podcast, our goal is to provide some direction for attorneys who may be feeling a bit lost, and I believe I have the perfect guest with me today to help us achieve that mission. So earlier this year, her company released a book called The Small Firm Roadmap Revisited, a guide to the healthy law firm of your future. In addition to being the co-author of that book, she's also a highly acclaimed law firm coach. Stephanie Everett, the CEO of Lawyerist, joins me now. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Stephanie.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm very excited, and I'm usually not this awake at 10 o'clock in the morning, which is kind of sad to say. But so I'm sure many of our listeners are familiar with Lawyerist, but for those who aren't, can you tell us a little bit about Lawyerist and also your role at the company?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we started with one of our co-founders who was just annoyed and ranting in his blog about why lawyers weren't embracing technology. It's kind of funny now. That was like 12 or 13 years ago. From there, it's grown into a company that really just does two things. One, we help lawyers run a healthier business. Law school didn't teach us all the things we need to know to actually run a business. And yet that's what lawyers do when they go and hang a shingle, right? We become business owners. So we kind of help fill in the blanks there. And then the second piece of our business is really just helping lawyers find the service providers, the technology that they might need to help them with their business. So if they go onto our site, we have all these reviews and you can check out all the different tech providers and service providers and get good information.
I myself have been reading Lawyerist since I got into not really the legal profession, but in the legal services industry. And even for me, it's super helpful because I get to kind of keep up with the space, who's doing what, who bought who, what new technologies are coming out, because I want to be able to do the same sort of thing. Is if a customer comes to me, I can say, oh, this great piece on Lawyerist just put out the 10 best legal technologies. You should take a look and see which one is the best fit for your firm. So I've had plenty of experience reading Lawyerist and finding value. So I want to ask, in 2009, Lawyerist released the first edition of the Small Firm Roadmap. And now this year, you're following up with the Small Firm Roadmap Revisited. Obviously, a lot has happened in the world since 2019. So following up with an updated book certainly makes a lot of sense. But what are some of the biggest topics from the last few years that you felt needed to be included in the new edition?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously, we addressed the pandemic. It's interesting because we had no idea when we released the book in fall of 19. We said changes were coming, and it was really interesting because we said, here's some 5 or 6 changes we think are coming. None of them were a global pandemic, by the way, but the pandemic ended up implicating all those changes that we kind of thought people should be thinking about. So that was kind of interesting. So we obviously wanted to acknowledge the pandemic and what had changed in the space. But I think this new version, we refined our thoughts a little bit, and really some of the new ideas that are coming out of it is really this concept of ownership versus partnership. And what does it mean to own a business? So we go a lot deeper into this idea of all the implications that surround the idea that you own a business, and partnership isn't a job promotion. It's a business transaction. So we go a little bit more into how to think about your firm as a business, how to value it, how to potentially sell it, how to position it to sell it. Even if you don't want to sell it, doing those steps now is going to make it a more valuable and more successful business. And then we also reframed it around our new healthy firm framework. So we had already done that on the website. It made sense for the book to align. And so we're really thinking about someone's firm or in terms of healthy strategy, team, clients, profits, systems, and finally owner. And to us, those are the components of a healthy firm.
So if those are the components of a healthy firm, what do you find are some of the biggest issues with the way that small firms have traditionally run?
I mean, I think if we were to break it down, it probably falls into a couple of categories. And maybe the first bucket is that it was really lawyer-centric. And this was true in our first book. We talk about the idea of what does it mean to shift and be client-centered. In the old days, everything was sort of built around the lawyer, right? You came to a law firm when the lawyer told you, and the lawyer sat behind a big mahogany desk, and the lawyer set the price, and the lawyer determined what work needed to be done. I mean, if I came to you and said, I have this problem, there was not a lot of discussion necessarily around our choice that I would have as the client or consumer around how you might approach my case. You'd be like, I've got you, I'm going to handle it, and you'll just get a bill at the end of the month. Good luck. Hope you can pay it, right? Now, the landscape has changed. I can sit, I always talk about, like, I can sit in front of my TV, dial up Netflix or whatever I want to watch, use my iPad, order groceries, have them delivered to my door within a few hours. The way we interact with the world has changed, and clients now are demanding different things from their law firms as well. It always astonishes me. I still have a lawyer who our company works with who sends us a paper invoice and wants me to write a check and find a stamp and mail it back to him. And I'm just like, no, not in today's world. Like, you have to put your client first. So when you start putting yourself in your client's shoes, lots of opportunities open up. And by the way, this is all good for business, because while you can't necessarily control the outcome of your client's case always, you can control their experience. And so providing a better client experience, you may not even get the client the result they wanted, but if they felt great and updated and in control and part of the decision-making process and all these things along the way, they're going to leave you raving reviews and be really excited to refer more work to you and work with you again.
So I agree with you. And two episodes ago, I mentioned that I got a speeding ticket. It's my first speeding ticket. I was super nice to the cop, and he gave me a speeding ticket anyway. It was a bad one, so I got all these points. But I did the same thing. And it's so funny for me to call up a lawyer, because I know I'm in tune with their business, so I know what they want to do. I'm like, hey, I got a speeding ticket. What do you want me to do? Take a picture of the ticket, send it to what email address, who gets CC'd, and then you'll send me the thing I got to sign. He's like, yeah, that's exactly it, right? So I do all that. And he kept me in the loop every step of the way. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I'm going to try. But, you know, lately I haven't been having much success. So I just don't want to tell you that I'll be able to get no points. And every step of the way, and he called me and he didn't get me a good result at all. I still have like 4 points on my license. I got to do the defensive driving class and my insurance is going to go up. But I still think that he did a good job, and I'm happy with the way that he communicated with me. So maybe that's a millennial approach, right? Maybe. I don't know. But I'm still happy with the way that it went. I would hire him again. And I would recommend him again, because that sort of thing is more important to me than if I was just in the dark and one day the ticket disappeared. You know, I don't want to be like thinking about whether or not I have this, or I got to show up, or I owe money and it's going to go to collection. No, he communicated with me. He was the best, texting me all this stuff. And I think that's goes along with what you're saying, is being more client-centric as opposed to here's how I'm going to do it and you do this and you do that. I was like, I knew where he was. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's great. I think the other kind of big change that we want to see from a traditional firm to the new is also people-centric, right? So how do we treat our team? And we sort of hate when people say non-lawyers. You know, there's this thing like there's lawyers and there's non-lawyers. Like, no, that's dumb. Everyone's a part of a team. We're all pulling in the same direction, hopefully, and providing great client service. Law firms aren't traditionally known as like the best places to work. Like, I've had really crazy stories shared with me. I had a legal assistant once who told me about a partner in her Manhattan, New York days of being at a big law firm. And he like literally threw a stapler across the bay where all the legal assistants were sitting. I mean, I was like, that could do some damage, a stapler. But, you know, we have these horrible stories. And I mean, I have them from unfortunately when I practiced, and I've seen it, that there's just a lot of, there was a lot of bad behavior and bad management. And we work too hard. I mean, we're working at all hours of the day. We're worried about billable hours, which are stupid. And all of this sets up for a terrible work experience, which is going to roll over into your client experience. So we think there's a different way to approach your practice. And so having a healthy team, but it starts, I mean, this is why it's all integrated, right? If you have a healthy business model, there's opportunities now. We can get into this, but like, I believe the billable hour is a pretty dumb way to determine the value that you're providing to your clients. And when you change that model, when you look at that differently, it opens up so many possibilities to use technology, drive efficiencies, actually work less and make more. Wow, that's a great idea that most people might want to get behind. And then we can also start treating our team differently. We can incentivize differently. We can compensate differently. We can take Fridays off. I have people who are running their law practice from other countries, from the beach in Costa Rica or Madrid. I mean, there's all kinds of possibilities out there that benefit us too as owners, but it kind of starts with just really thinking about your practice and what you're doing differently.
So when it pertains, I've had a few people on the show have a different method of like billing than the billable hour, but what are some of the things that you and Lawyerist have sort of been proponents on in instead of the billable hour?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're big fans of flat fees or even value-based billing, where you're thinking about the value that you're providing to someone and coming up with a price that way. I know the pushback, oh, I do contested litigation, I could never predict. And yeah, BS. I've got plenty of people that I work with who do that, and they're billing flat fee all the time. So can it be done? Absolutely. Does it take you changing the way you think about it, thinking about profitability? Because by the way, whether you can do something, if you say, I'm going to basically charge 10 hours for this, and people say, well, it took me 11. That wasn't profitable. That's not the definition of profit. So it takes some training. So we got to rethink how we think about the business of law, but it's absolutely doable. I also have a lot of people moving to subscription pricing and thinking about that you're really, what you're charging for is the relationship. So it's a whole nother mindset. But if you have a practice that lends itself to an ongoing relationship with someone, you know, this works well for employment lawyers and business lawyers, but I'm also seeing it in lots of other contexts too, that opens up really interesting opportunities. I think it's around, again, stepping back, forgetting what you've learned, and for a minute, letting yourself think about, what are people hiring me for? What is the value that I bring? And what are the solutions I have? Because sometimes I have law firms doing really interesting things where it's not necessarily what someone might call traditional legal work. So if for the employment lawyers, for example, their subscription package may include a certain amount of training for all the employees, or, you know, access to the knowledge of information that you have. Like if you're part of their subscription, you can come on and get, and in fact, my law firm that we have for HR issues for our company, that's exactly what they do. I can go onto the portal and I can ask a question and a lawyer is going to answer it within so many hours, but it's usually pretty quick. And we pay a flat fee every month. They have predictable income. I love that I don't have to worry about, is this going to be a $450 an hour times whatever point, whatever people are going to charge me for it. Like, it's super easy. And I mean, I'm super excited about it as a client to use it this way. So there's lots of opportunities here to rethink our billing practices.
I do like the idea of a small criminal defense firm having a subscription for like petty criminals. I don't know why.
Yeah, you're going to be coming back.
Just like, oh yeah, I plan on holding up a few convenience stores this year. Can you send me a subscription based?
I mean, I think according to some like documentaries I've seen, that is what some people do when they really are in the crime business, I think, I guess. Like,
Better Call Saul, you know?
Exactly.
So those who are running smaller law firms may not get to hire a lot of people. So I think they're sort of, I don't know, hesitant to hire or hesitant to move to these models because they're like, oh, it's just me. I need to make a certain amount of money to make sure I'm afloat and the business is afloat, my family. But I think it's extremely important for them to hire the right people to their staff. So what tips do you have for small law firm owners when it comes to building their initial team?
Yeah, love this question. So first, I mean, the good news is in today's market, today's economy, there's lots of options besides a 40-hour a week W-2 employee. So if you're wondering, am I ready? Can I afford? That's a big commitment to take on. The good news is you can outsource and you can get a virtual assistant and or virtual receptionist and bookkeepers and marketing assistants. Like, there's so many people out there and it's really reasonable and easy to do. And so that's a great place to start. And some of them you can even start with someone at 10 hours a week. You're going to quickly realize how much you can give them, because that's always a big question too. Like, what could I delegate? You can delegate a lot. And then you can work your way up. So that's one good news. When you are ready to hire that employee, though, I believe we have to get out. It's like, again, no one ever taught us this in law school. There was no HR class in law school. So I always say, like, to everybody I work with, like, no judgment. No one taught you this. And probably the way you learned was by watching what other people did or how you were interviewed. And I, at least when I started out of law school, I was kind of told, well, find someone that you might want to go have a drink with after work. That's what the goal of the hiring process is. And no, you're not trying to find a drinking buddy. At least I don't think so. You're trying to find that one person who's going to work really well on your team in the way that you like to work. And so it really starts with your core values. These are the guiding principles that you want that will guide your team and how you work. You know, are you systems oriented? Or are you iterative? Like, we had someone, we were working on our team once, and she was like, I just want to come to work and do the same thing every day. And we realized, we're like, you're going to hate our team. We're constantly changing. We're constantly like, hey, can we do that thing better? Okay, that's cool. We just figured that out. But could we tweak it this way? What about this? And, you know, and she was just like, could we just take a break, you guys? Could we just not work on improving something this quarter? And that was so crazy to us. And it was a good reminder that when we're interviewing, we have to make sure we're finding someone who can keep up with the speed of change that we tend to work in. And so you have to really step back and think about, how do you work? And what does that working world look like for you, so that we can make sure we're hiring for that? If you're systems driven, I had a lawyer I worked with once, and her office manager, this lawyer had systems for everything. She was amazing, like very detailed manuals, checklists, steps, all the things. And she had a paralegal who just would not follow it. She just completely ignored it. And it was so frustrating to her. And I was like, yeah, like, she's not the right person. You have to have someone who's going to be willing to follow the checklist every time. So we have to make that part of the hiring process. So I think it starts with really getting clear on who it is you're trying to hire, so that we can then build a hiring process and a system to make sure we're finding that right person for you and for your team. And we're not just trying to find your next drinking buddy.
That was an incredible answer. Drinking buddy is a plus, though.
Yes, for sure. That would be bonus, but that's like... Yeah. Icing on top.
100%. And I'm fortunate. So I've learned from people like you. So when I made my first two hires, I knew what I was looking for, but I also knew what was important to me, right? I really like positivity. I really like people who are not afraid to speak their mind and challenge the status quo, because I don't like to assume that I'm right. And in fact, I have a lot of self-doubt. So the people will either tell me, like, yes, you're right, or no, you're not right. And, I guess we're not drinking buddies, but we are buddies. Like, you know, and that's what I was looking for, right? Is I was looking for somebody to be very friendly with, that I could get along with, that it wasn't just a work relationship, even though we do work well together. But it's important to know what you're looking for when you're hiring somebody. I love that answer. I think that was pretty incredible, honestly.
Thanks.
So, yeah, right?
That's good.
Good guest. I want to talk about increasing efficiency and saving time, like you said. I think those are or have become the goal for many growing law firms in the recent years, which is a good thing. But I don't see law firms going about this the right way. So what advice do you have for these small firm lawyers to achieve an increase in efficiency and save a little bit of time?
Yeah. I mean, I guess first, can I ask, when you say not the right way, do you have like an example or something you've noticed that doesn't work?
I would say they're adopting technology before they really know how to use it. And like trying to force things into a workflow that they haven't necessarily trained on.
Those are good examples.
Okay. Yeah. We'll go with that.
Yeah. No, I think first of all, like one of my pet peeves, because everybody's always like, oh, do you have some productivity hacks, right? Everyone's trying to time hack their way into life right now. And suddenly that's going to, I guess, let them do more work, or they think that will create efficiencies. And so I always tell everybody, I don't think it's about hacks. I think it's about priorities. So the first thing everyone should be asking themselves are, what are the priorities and what are the tasks and the works and the projects that they should be focused on? And let's get rid of everything else. That's where you can use that VA and start delegating and start getting things off your plate. Because I think when I have the attorneys I work with do an accountability chart, and we say, okay, what are all the essential functions that need to take place in your law firm? You could be a law firm of one, but you still need IT support, invoicing, collections, any number of things that it doesn't matter how many people you have, there are still all these functions that need to happen. When you start mapping that out, and I make them actually draw it out, and I'm like, now put your name in all the boxes that you do. And they're like, but it's just me. I'm like, that's right. Put your name in all the boxes that you do. So it's not that you're inefficient. It's that you're trying to wear 10 different hats. You're doing all these different jobs. And so once you have that realization, it's the big aha moment of like, oh, okay, maybe I am doing too much. Right. Like, who could possibly do 10 jobs at the same time? That's very difficult to do. So I always like to start with that first and say, we got to focus you in on what you need to do. And then you're ready to delegate. In order to do that, you do need some systems. You do need to think through intentionally how your business runs. And I think the second mistake that people make is they think that spending time working on their business, you know, we all like that phrase now, we've done something in our head because we bill by the hour. We think that if it's not billable, it's not valuable. And that is one of my other bigger pet peeves, because that's just not true. If I told you, hey, you're going to spend 10 hours on a non-billable project, but you're going to create a new product offering that we could sell for $1,000, let's just say $1,000 flat fee, and we'll sell 50 of them over the next 6 months. Is that worth 10 hours of your time? Probably, right? But what we do is we say, oh, I got to be focused on billable work. I got to be doing client work. And they don't realize that focusing on their business, being intentional, creating systems, thinking through how they want their firm to work so that then the technology can come along, like you said, and help it, that is truly valuable work. And you're going to 10X the business that way. But we got to get lawyers, we got to get them out of their heads a little bit and focused on the right things to do it.
I think that ties into what you were saying before is being intentional, right? Like, you could say, oh, I want to grow my business, so I'm going to hire a marketing company and I'm going to hire two more lawyers. It's like, okay, but what are they going to do? You know, do you have a plan for what those lawyers are going to work on? Do you have a plan for getting this marketing company to help you? Like, what are you working on in your business? So being intentional and really understanding what it is that you want first, and then also understanding that spending time on those things, right? Like, you have to train those lawyers. That will make you money in the future, right? Because right, they will be able to do more work. Or spending time with the marketing company and maybe learning some things and telling them what you've been working on, what you have success with, helping them get resources that, reviews to make to let other people know what type of work you've done and who you are as a person. This is all important stuff that doesn't go alongside of this billable hour, but isn't necessarily not profitable.
Yeah.
I like the way you phrase that.
And as much as I want you to outsource things, and you should, I also will just remind everyone, you need to have a working knowledge so that you can call BS on these folks. Because another thing I see happen a lot, I was just on with someone yesterday, and they're given a ton of money to a marketing company, and the marketing company was running Google ads for them. And I was like, well, who's your ideal client? And the guy identified like a very high level person inside a bank, let's say. And I was like, do you think that person, if that was their job, where are they going for help and information? And he was like, I don't know. And he was upset that the Google ads weren't working. And I was like, yeah, because that's probably a mismatch, right? Like, you have to understand a little bit. You don't have to understand a ton, but you understand a little bit about marketing. We have a free guide on our website. Well, we can put a link to on marketing, for example. We have a ton of eBooks that are all free on our site. But you need to understand enough that you can kind of push back on some of these people, because unfortunately, there are a lot of people out there that will just take advantage of us, quite frankly, and sell us things that we might not need. And I'd really want lawyers to be more strategic. So you got to understand enough, and then you can outsource, and then you can hold those people accountable. And like, if they're not giving you marketing metrics and reports and showing you ROI every month, you need to get rid of them right away. Like, you've got to stay on top of this and make sure you're not just wasting money.
We will be right back after this short ad.
Who doesn't want to be a successful attorney with a busy practice, but still have that life? Having those lunch breaks, playing golf, going on vacation, Answering Legal allows you to.
I really just don't have a need for a receptionist anymore. I've used Answering Legal services for the past 2 years, and I wish I retained Answering Legal 10 years earlier.
Answering Legal is an extension of my firm. It allows lawyers and paralegals to actually work without answering the phone. Anytime I leave this office, I know my business is still running.
Sometimes we're in court or we're dealing with other clients, and because of Answering Legal, my partner and I are able to address any client concerns or any new clients immediately, and it's really increased our business.
If you wish to enhance your client base, improve your client satisfaction, and at the same time reduce your overhead, then hire Answering Legal.
I want to give credit to the lawyers that there are really, really good salespeople out there. I've bought stuff that I didn't necessarily know what I was buying, but I knew I wanted to buy the result, right? And that's what the salesperson sort of sold me. And then something gets lost in translation in the process of getting onboarded. And, you know, the person working thinks that they're doing a good job, but there's a disconnect there. My wife works for this really huge company, and she gets these crazy clients that they're like listed on the NASDAQ, right? And they'll go and they'll try to buy advertising with her, and they're talking about things that she can't offer them. And she realizes that there's a disconnect between what the person was sold on the phone and what they're looking for as an outcome. And so she has to sort of bridge that gap. When you have a working knowledge of what you're trying to obtain or what your client is, you then can give that information to the marketing company. And I just don't want anybody to feel like ashamed that they bought something. Like, you can make it
right.
Work, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, look, tons of people out there and are making mistakes. And again, like, I'm always like, no judgment. But if you do, don't stay in them. Don't stay in it. Like, just find a way out, maybe.
100%. Either work with that team and educate yourself on and try to make it work, or maybe you unfortunately hired the wrong company. It's really okay. I don't think that they're charging you hundreds of thousands and you're going to go bankrupt, you know, and like buy out the contract and find somebody who better fits your process once you've learned a little bit more.
Yeah. Like, I'll be the first to say, like, as a business owner, I make a ton of mistakes, but the whole point is to make them right. You make a decision, because the other thing that we don't want to do is just not make decisions. Too many business owners are afraid to make decisions, and so they just let issues linger. If you find yourself thinking about the same issue for 2 or 3 or 4 or more weeks, and you haven't actually done something to try to change it, this is your wake up call. Like, just get in there, make a mistake, pull a lever, figure it out. Like, we kind of joke that our coaching program is called Lawyerist Lab. And I always say, like, it's not the lecture hall. It's where you go to experiment. You got to test things out. You got to see what works. And you're not going to know what works unless you pull those levers and figure out, okay, I tried this, got a little bit, but maybe not all the way. Okay, let's do it differently this week and we'll go a different direction. So just keep trying is the point. Don't give up.
So you mentioned the Lawyerist Lab. I know that your company has done a ton of work with lawyers through this program. Can you tell us a little bit more about it and how your interactions with attorneys through the lab has influenced your educational content?
Yeah, for sure. So we launched Lab over 5 years ago now. I can't even keep up.
Wow. But
I know, right? I'm like, oh, getting old. But it's a coaching program for lawyers, and we're really focused on helping lawyers create healthier business along with our theme. There's a lot of people out there, and you'll hear them talk about, oh, we're really here to help you drive your revenue, and we're going to help you maximize revenue. We think healthy profits are a part and a component of a healthy business, but we're also focused on the whole picture. So like I mentioned before, I've got lawyers who come to me who are like, I make a good amount of money. I want to see my kids, or I want to, you know, spend summers in Costa Rica or whatever.
What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that?
I love that. So I just say that because it's a really fun community of people. You know, if what I've said today resonates, then this is a good community, because everyone in there, they don't all have it figured out, and they're really open and willing to share their vulnerabilities and where they're, you know, making those mistakes so others can learn too. But they're all like, yeah, let's build client centered. Let's try some things. Let's not just go back on what we know. And so that's fun. And the program itself has a couple of components, but essentially we're just trying to help lawyers hit their goals. So we come in, we help you define those goals. What is it? And then we give you coaching, a community, online resources, tools. I mean, there's so many different ways. I tell everybody, like, we have lots of different ways to engage with us. But at the end of the day, I just want results. If all I do is teach you a new concept, I think I've failed as a coach. Like, my job is to help you get in there and implement, like I was saying, pull some levers and let's see what works so that you can actually achieve those results. That's where the value of the program is like, what is it you're trying to do with your business? Well, let's create that path. We'll create that plan to get there and then help you implement it. And if you get stuck or lost along the way, you'll have your coach and your community there to help you.
I see you as like the bumpers on the bowling lane, right? Like, I could try, but you know, you bump me back in and eventually I'll hit at least one of the pins.
Yeah. You know, I like that. It's a good one.
Or if I'm not the best bowler. I think I have, with the bumpers, missed all of the pins like once or twice. But that's
it's
just
possible. I've seen my daughter do it.
Yeah.
That's a special talent.
I'm talented then. I think what Lawyerist does exceedingly well is you guys have an eye on the future. And you stay on top of topics and trends, but can you give me some insight? Like, what would you be writing about in your next update to the small law firm roadmap? Like, what's on the horizon?
I mean, I know it's the overused word right now, but if you're not embracing and leveraging AI tools, you're going to be left behind. So obviously our team has already gone pretty deep into the rabbit hole of ChatGPT. We're using it daily. I use it daily now. That may surprise people. Like, well, how do you use it? I'm like, I got all kinds of ways to use it. And we're doing workshops in our lab program. Like, I'm actually trying to live demo for folks. This is how we're using these tools so that they can see it. And every time they do, you just see people's eyes pop. I think one of the next things to watch for is obviously Copilot. So Microsoft is announced that tool is coming to the Microsoft Office 365 environment, which most lawyers are still on. I know some have made the switch over to the Google platform, but it's hard to get away from Word when you're a lawyer, which is okay. I think this is an opportunity actually now, because Microsoft's clearly investing a ton of money in Copilot, and all the stuff I'm reading about it, it is going to change the way we work. It just is. And it sounds grandiose, but I'll give a few things that they've mentioned on the blog that, you know, you can come back from vacation on Monday morning and say, hey, I've been out for a week. What's in my email I need to know? And in 5 seconds, it's going to give you a summary. It'll have read all your emails that you received in a week and tell you the highlights of this is what you need to pay attention to, right? Isn't that what everybody wants in 30 seconds or less? You know, if you're on Teams, which is the video platform, if you're not familiar, inside Office, you know, you could have someone show up to a Teams meeting late and ask Copilot, hey, what have I missed? And it's going to pop out a written summary. It's obviously it's going to summarize the meeting notes for you and capture that. It's going to be able to do generative functions based on your data. So it's going to live inside your Microsoft, you know, Office universe. So I suspect that means like it's going to be able to pull from your briefs and pull from content that you're writing. And that's, I mean, so we still need to see all the stuff, but I can tell you that our team, we already have a focus group in our team getting trained as much as we can so that we're ready as soon as it deploys. Like we're going to be out there teaching our lawyers how to use this. And the lawyers who are afraid of it, don't be that person. Instead, think about this isn't a threat. This is your opportunity. And are there going to be people who try to go do legal documents on chat? Yes, but how can you? I mean, it's just like LegalZoom. You're still alive. You still have a practice. People are still going to hire you. They still need your help. Now, though, you have a way to really figure out how to maximize these tools, which also, with this increased efficiency, also really drives that billable hour question even more too, right? So
I like how you phrase it as an opportunity. I don't know. I'm compelled to share this is like when MySpace first came out, right? Typically, comedians just like went to open mics and drove around and handed out flyers, right? And Dane Cook is one of the biggest arena comics of all time. Started posting all his stuff and interacting with his fans on MySpace. He was the first person to do it. And other comedians were like, I'm not doing that. That's this, that's that, that my fans have too much access to me. And he became enormous. So I imagine like the first lawyer to say, oh, I'm going to advertise on Facebook and get clients was like a really scary thing.
Right.
But somebody's got to be the first. And if you're the early adopter, unfortunately for the rest of the world, the early adopters really get, it's the early bird to the worm type of thing. So you can either be afraid of it or you can embrace it and be more successful because of it. Yeah. Truly.
I think so. I think it's exciting. We'll see what all it can do. But, you know, I guess the other thing too, don't get overwhelmed by it because there is a lot out on it right now. So, you know, we're still to be seen, but I think I think we'd be foolish if we didn't think that is about to change and the way we work and all the things. And I don't think we touch on it enough in this book because I'm sure we mention it, but maybe not as like, if we were writing the book today, we would have probably a more of a chapter on it.
I would definitely agree with that. I'm a little jealous that it couldn't write essays for me back when I was in school and that I spent a long time writing. I wish, not that I am a proponent of cheating, just I hated school.
Here's another cool example. We'll stop geeking out on this. Like there's a different tool. There's video. There's also like video AI tools. So there's different tools using this technology in different ways. But if you can, so now you can load videos up into this one tool and it gives you the transcript. And so if you have the you just go and delete the like you were editing a document, and it's also editing the transcript or the video. So that's pretty cool. Now anybody can become a video editor, lickety split. But imagine, so then you start thinking through, or you can cut out pieces of a video, right? So you start thinking through implications. And I talked to someone recently who used this. They were at a hearing and someone said that the opposing counsel said this person testified in this way, but she knew that it was the exact opposite. She had a team member standing by with the video transcripts, was able to go to that piece immediately, pull that clip in real time. And you just by like pasting, you know, copying and pasting this part of the deposition transcript, and then that part of the clip comes up and they were able to press play, show the judge, actually, this is what that person testified to. And they ended up winning this case. And it was apparently like multi-million dollar. It was like a huge case, but it was because, you know, they had that technology and that ability to do that so quickly, and how powerful it was for the judge to see it instead of just, you know, reading. And imagine, you know, when you had all the carts and all the deposition transcripts. And I mean, we used to have like hand trucks of stuff that we'd have to make multiple trips into the courtroom. And now you're just going to have all that on your laptop and just dial it up.
So I wanted to finish up with two things. If our audience wants to check out your book, where can they find it? And if people want to continue following your work, where can they go?
Yeah. So you can go to lawyerist.com/book or Amazon, and it's the Small Firm Roadmap Revisited. But lawyerist.com/book or just really lawyerist.com is where you'll find all kinds of our content. You can read all of the free eBooks that I was mentioning, up-to-date content, check out the reviews, see the book, see all the things we're doing. And if anybody wants to reach out directly, I'm always happy to connect. Stephanie@lawyerist.com.
Stephanie, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. Want to give a special thank you to all of our listeners again. We hope you enjoyed this conversation, and we will be back with another episode of Everything Except the Law soon. Be sure to check out previous episodes of the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the Answering Legal YouTube channel. Links to everything covered in today's conversation, which is probably extensive, will be in the description of this episode. And we hope to see you next time, everyone.